hello and welcome to The Entrepreneurs on Monocle Radio, the show all about inspiring people, innovative companies and fresh ideas in global business. Today's programme is all about getting the basics right. We'll meet the co-founder of a clothing brand born from a desire to bring greater intentionality to the fashion industry.
I just thought to myself, if we're going to do this in a way that was really thought out, coming up with a foundation of great products first, let's make the best plain white sock we can before we go around trying to reinvent the wheel.
This is The Entrepreneurs with me, Tom Edwards. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs. Adam Genotti is co-founder of Druthers, a New York City-based fashion label specializing in sustainable clothing and accessories with a focus on high-quality basics from boxer shorts to socks and t-shirts. The brand started with a group of friends working in fashion. Adam, who has decades of experience working as a designer for brands like Nike and Ralph Lauren, felt the need to be part of something more thoughtful. After identifying a missing link, he wanted to refocus and build a brand on the pillars of quality and sustainability with local manufacturing and eco-friendly fabrics. I caught up with Adam to chat about the importance of creating timeless, well-made products over chasing trends and to hear about the Big Apple's influence on Druthers' identity. Adam kicked things off by telling me more about the start of the journey.
Absolutely. I'm a designer first and foremost. That's how I started almost 30 years ago now. And when it comes to designing, it just came to the point where I'm sick of just designing things for the sake of designing things. You know, you work at a fashion house and you're stuck with like, all right, next season, pump out new design, pump out new capsule idea. And it just gets a bit redundant and overdone. And, then there was the issue with sustainability and fast fashion was coming in years ago. And I just thought to myself, if we're going to do this and do something, I was with a group of friends at the time, you know, we had to do it in a way that was really thought out. And I thought coming up with a foundation of great products first, you know, it doesn't have to be designed out. It could just be a plain white sock, right? But let's make the best plain white sock we can before we go around trying to reinvent the wheel. And that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, I love that. And it taps into something really interesting that we often talk about at Monocle, which is when we talk about sustainability. Yeah, great. Of course, we want it to involve sourcing great materials and keeping production local where possible and so forth, or certainly in markets that you understand really well and you can trace the supply chains and so on. But actually, maybe the starting point with sustainability is to maybe make and buy a bit less, but to buy better. And I think that's something, I guess, that maybe you did learn a little bit through your experience at so many other famous brands, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And being at other visiting factories and things like that, and you see the best of the world and the worst of the world. So yeah, sustainability is fine. You know, it's nice to have organic cotton socks, but if they're made cheaply, you have to replace them all the time. There's nothing sustainable about that. So step one was durability and having a really great quality product for sure.
Tell me a bit about NY, because obviously that's where you're from. You spent so much time. I know you've lived and worked around the world, and that's helped to inform your design approach and all the rest of it. But like, yeah. There's a real clear seam of New York that runs through this. Talk to me a little bit about that. Is it one of those old truisms? You can take the man out of New York, but you can't take the New York out of the man?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, so I'm from New York. I was born in the Bronx. I grew up in New Jersey as a kid and moved back here right after 9/11. So I've been here for probably around, out of my 42 years, approaching somewhere around late 20, 30 years. But the real reason why Druthers is New York City is because that's where we're based. And I always thought about it as a fashion hub.
And what does it mean as that hub? I think people have a preconceived notion, maybe some misperceptions about New York in that realm. What does New York fashion mean to you?
Well, it's iconic for sure. I mean, you know, I worked at Ralph Lauren here. I've worked at other brands here. And, you know, you have it was always Donna Karan, New York. And there's brands that use New York. But I wanted to lay the groundwork for some specificity and say, you know, we're from New York City specifically, right? And we're not from Paris. We're not from Tokyo, even though we might work there and make stuff there. But I thought that putting that out there was a really interesting way to lay the brand out. Like, this is Druthers New York City. We're speaking for it. It could work against us. You know, there's probably some people that don't like it here, It could work for us, but it's just the truth. We're a New York City-based brand, and I don't want to say it's pride at all, but it's definitely, hey man, here's where we're at and this is what we're doing. And it's an easy way to kind of lay the groundwork rather than, some people might use a different catch-all or a different phrase to describe their brand. And I thought I don't know, like coming from the 80s, I feel like location was always a thing. Like the old haute couture people were like screaming Italy, screaming Paris. The old New York brands is like, again, I use DKNY as the obvious reference. Sorry to be obvious, but it's like an easy one, right? It just feels from a branding person, I've been working on branding for 20 years now, and from a branding perspective, it just felt right, especially with the Druthers brand. And I also think that Druthers could be a little bit English in a way as a word. We don't really use it out here. Like nobody 10 years ago, nobody out here was like, what's Druthers? What does that mean? So like there could have been a misperception on like where we were from. And I just wanted to lay it out. Like we're a New York City based fashion business.
Yeah, exactly. No, I like that. And what I like also is how maybe those kind of the misperceptions of reality, they kind of rub up against each other in an interesting way. I think interesting things happen creatively at those kind of intersections. Let's talk a bit about product, because obviously the birth of the brand, or in its genesis, it was a lot of focus on undergarment, stuff like that. But I know obviously the range has expanded. You've got all sorts of ambitions. Well, I don't know, what's the kind of big sellers right now? I know you've obviously got hats, which I think flew off the shelves. What does it look like in terms of the dynamics of how people are engaging with your different products?
Well, if I could preface this answer by just you mentioned something interesting, and that's like we started with underwear. For the record, I'm not an underwear designer, right? Like I started out as a product designer doing everything, and the underwear bit, starting with boxer shorts, was a Trojan horse into the market because, again, let's be honest, last thing the world needs is another fashion brand. You go on some of these big box websites, and there's like 557 brands, and like next year, there 300 of them are gone, and there's another 600 that replaced them. We don't need more fashion brands. But unfortunately, I didn't go to law school. Like I'm kind of stuck in this industry, and I thought like, okay, well, if we're gonna do a business, we got to start with a product that has no attention right now. Nobody graduates from fashion design school and says, I can't wait to be the next underwear designer. No, they all want to be the next Virgil Abloh. They want to be the next Rei Kawakubo. They want to be somebody iconic. That's why the fashion in and of itself is a bit ostentatious. And the people that are in the industry, no offense meant by that. It just is what it is, right? It's fashion design. It's out there. It's loud. And people don't want to come out like, ah, I'm gonna come out with socks on the runway. It just doesn't make any sense, right? So like for us, like I was friends with a lot of people at stores, Odin in New York, opening ceremony, was good with the engineered garments guys and a lot of people that were really I looked up to. And I was like, well, how can I work with these people? Because they're amazing and I'm just a drop in the bucket compared to some of the fashion talent out there. So it was really to find a lane that worked. And at the time, who was designing boxer shorts? I mean, you'd have to go to a H&M or somebody like this and you get the Brooks Brothers and you find the boxer dog printed on a boxer and like you're like, yeah, right, I get it, but like nobody's really paying attention to the textile design and the fabrics of that. And we just figured, you know what, this is the back door into some of these spots. This is how we could establish the brand. We come out with a product line that nobody cares about. We make it good. And then people will say, wow, okay, Druthers did boxers really well. But we can't stop there. Then we go on to socks, then we go on to beanies, et cetera. I think it was my friend Marlon and Zen out in Tokyo that introduced me to the sock factory that I think was working on Visvim at the time, or might have been Double Taps, and said, yeah, okay, this sounds like a purposeful way of doing something great here, and let's try to design into this category now. So we started that way, and then every product launch since has been really, okay, what could we do that's new and fresh? Like the robes, let's make a kimono out of it. Why is it always a one piece? Let's do a shortened top set. Let's make it out of fabric that actually dries, things like that.
Tell me a bit about your experiences in Japan, because you reeled off a couple of names there, some real Monocle favorites, Visvim, take your pick. And obviously it's a market that we're pretty passionate about, and I think Monocle understands well. But maybe there might be some listeners who aren't so familiar about some of the unique, it's almost a kind of philosophy that goes into the sourcing of materials, the intentionality of the design. Tell me why that resonates with you.
Well, first of all, you got to give a lot of credit to the entire Japanese fashion market because if you utter the words made in Japan to somebody from my father's generation born in the 50s, they're like, what are you talking about? Like, that's the worst stuff. And you're like, no, what do you mean? They've come a really, really long way from mid-century, from being looked at as kind of a cheap manufacturing hub, to having such attention to detail and perseverance, to being some of the best manufacturers in the world. So first of all, that's pretty incredible. And applied to fashion, they just have like a rigor and attention to detail that lends itself to finding out what the West is doing. And I'm not going to get into the history of like post-war, but that's a rabbit hole to get into, of like how the culture has changed post-World War II. But if you look at what they've done since, I mean, they made denim better than Americans. They have better baseball pitchers. Like, they've taken everything that we've done, and they're like, check this out. You guys make whiskey, we're gonna make whiskey, and we're gonna make it amazing, right? So like, just outside of fashion, they take some of the best and most like honed in, hard to make products in the world, and they focus on it until they do it better. And that lays the foundation for this question, right? It's like they have perseverance, and they don't quit, and they're like, we're really interested in this. We find it amazing. You guys did a great job, and check it out. We're gonna make it. And no offense by the whiskey comment, but you gotta admit they do a pretty good job out there for a country that has no business making that. It's almost as if like Kentucky started making amazing sake. You'd be like, wait, something's wrong. They just have a really good sense of what to pick, and they just have a no quit attitude. They hunker down and they just make things amazing, and they just focus until they do it right. So that's first and foremost. Like, I think to start the question off, these guys are just great at it. And then the culture out there is, yeah, it's incredible, because they have little pockets. I mean, it's a maze, right? Like, you've never, it's a million layer onion. You go out there once, you think you've scratched the surface. You go out there twice, you're like, wow, I really got it this time. By the 30th time you're in Tokyo, you're like, I have no idea what's going on here. Like, it's completely like, I thought I had it all figured out. I could speak a little Japanese. I thought I'd been taught. I came back, everything's gone, everything's changed, the whole thing's different. It's like, I always say that one of the best things that, in my experience, right, one of the best things that Tokyo has to offer is a retail landscape and how that should look for fashion. Here, things get stale. You get, especially in the States, it's the same store over and over again. We don't change it up enough. I've gone to Tokyo on trips. I've gone to Osaka on trips for work. And you do comp shopping on the weekends with your company, whoever, whatever business you're going out with. So, we might land on a Saturday. Sunday, we'll go shopping all day. Monday, it's to the office. By Saturday, you go shopping again because you're there for a month. And the things that you didn't buy the week before, they're not only are they not there, it's like sold out, they're gone. The store's different. It's like they completely reset the store. I walk around, you got jet lag. You walk around, it's like 6:45, 7 a.m., and the entire staff is in the store having like a managerial meeting on how they're going to approach the customer, how they're going to clean up, how they're going to re-merchandise. The effort on newness and making something old feel fresh again, it's something that we need to learn a lot from. They have a great ability to make retail just feel really exciting all the time. And that's one of the funnest things there is for me. And that's outside of just the articulate, highly detailed collections that they always put out. Whether you like the aesthetic or not, doesn't matter. They could make military clothes really cool. Look at engineer garments. Who's wearing cargo pants since the 90s? Nobody, right? That was kind of a dead fashion until they came on board and Daikei said, you know what? We're going to do the old military style stuff and workwear stuff, and we're going to do it really amazing again. And that just shows their ability. They could take something that's not even good anymore and make it not only fresh again, but one of the more desirable brands. They just have an incredible ability to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. If I can pay you a compliment, I think you kind of get some of that. You can kind of sense that there's an awareness of that erudition of brand values and that expression of approach to design, I think, in what you do, which I hope you take in the spirit as intended. Let me just ask you about one other market, which is kind of different. Well, it's the same and different, because I know you're a big fan of manufacturing in Portugal, obviously an incredible, different kind of heritage. Maybe it's more about textiles. And actually, it's the unchanging nature of some of these factories and facilities and people who are working on these products in Portugal that give it its unique quality. So it's a very different dynamic, but there are similar values. It's about heritage. It's about provenance. Just talk to me a little bit about that, because again, it's another market that we know well, that we're quite evangelical about at Monocle, but making some of your stuff in Portugal must be, for different reasons, as much of a thrill as working with partners in Japan.
Full disclaimer, I agree with you. This isn't contrary to what you're saying, but I didn't want to make in Portugal, to be honest with you. I wanted to make everything in the garment district in New York and in Japan. Reason being is because we don't have any real good. We had a Shimaseki shop here. I think Stephen Allen had put me on to. So you could do some knit to shape stuff, but you were never able to do the complexities of knit to shape with socks and beanies that they do out there. So we were kind of like, let's druthers New York City. Let's really champion the garment district and try to make here. And then Hudson Yard went up and they sold the zoning rights back to the city and yada, yada, yada. Here we are. We don't really have a garment district the way we used to. And I was out in Saigon, another wonderful market. South Vietnam is really amazing facilities, very clean, very well put together. Reminded me of Japan, you know, like gardens in the back, daycare centers next to the place is very fair for labor. And a friend of mine that was working on the company at the time was out in Portugal making stuff and kind of inadvertently stuck us with a factory that also did a really good job. And I was forced to start to explore that market. And I'm, to your point, I'm glad I did, because it turned out to be much better than it was 15 years ago when I was trying it. I was helping my friend Teddy start a brand called Amelion Door. Amazing guy, needed some help with production, because he's a designer and a stylist first and foremost. So I was helping with all the outsourcing and production stuff. And we had gone to Portugal for one trip, and it was just like a terrible experience. And coming in back into it, you know, years later, I think it was 12 years after we went, this experience has been wonderful. I have two partners over there that are doing just amazing stuff. And it's almost like made in Italy. You know, they're really, really honing in on tailoring and their attention to detail is much better. So we've finally gotten a great product. You know, I've been working on so many different styles of clothing and different fabrics, and we've been experimenting with a lot with druthers, right? We only put out things that we feel really good about, but Portugal's starting to come up with winners, like the robe, you know, that we just put out. We're going to do a sweater. Again, a lot of the yarn and stuff is taken from Italy. We'll buy fabric in Italy, but we'll do the cut and sew. We'll do the CMT out in Portugal. And it's been a great experience lately, especially with the new partners I had. So we do our boxer shorts there. We do our boxer briefs. We do our t-shirts. We're coming out with sweaters this year. We have a mini collection that's going to be made in Portugal as well. And the experience has been great. And the other good thing is that, unlike certain other areas in the world, not as a deterrent, but just for us, we have to have certifications. It's one thing, okay, we're a fashion design company first. Second, we're trying to make a great quality product. And third, by the way, it's organic, or it's certified recycled, or it has that component to it of sustainability, which in our opinion can't be the thing you scream from the roof, right? We're fashion designers. So the organic component has to be like the last thing in the chain here for us. But we have to have that certification. We can't just say it's organic. And Portugal is one of those countries that has a government that really regulates it. They're actually coming through with certifications that you can trust, because it's regulated by a branch of the government, compared to, say, China or something, right? Which I'm sure there's great places in China, and I'm not trying to talk bad about them, but I don't know if I could trust a GOTS certification coming from China. So that's another thing about Portugal that we really like, the great attention to detail that they have, mixed with the authenticity and just the power to regulate as well. And they're getting better. You could see it every year. Like, everything that we do is kind of getting better and better.
Yeah, well, just in terms of progression then, let's come back to Druthers. What should we look out for? Because you've already, I mean, you've explained to us, and I know from looking at the expanding range, you're just interested in adding, as you said, pieces that work technically, that work aesthetically. You don't want to bring anything to market until you're super happy with it. But how do you calibrate the evolution of the brand and the pace at which you expand? Do you do it all intuitively? You've obviously got a strong team. You have good relationships. You trust one another. But what does that look like as you look towards the future, Adam?
Yeah, it's a good point, because we kind of started out trying to own categories. And like I said, like the boxer short was the Trojan horse back into the market for a brand. And, you know, as we move on, it's, you know, I'm classically trained as doing collections and design directing entire collections from color palette to theme to execution, tech pack, the whole nine. So it's kind of hard for me not to sit down and design in that way. And one of the things that was a real challenge for me was to not be contrived with delivery. Like, listen, I really want to make an awesome outerwear piece, right? But if Druthers came out with that, you'd be like, wait, so they did socks and underwear and t-shirts and robes, and now they have like technical outerwear? That makes no sense whatsoever, right? So I think one of the challenges is, and that's a great question, because like, I can't just do whatever I want. It has to follow something that makes sense. So it's like, okay, you have all the basics down. Now let's throw some layers over that. Let's make a crew neck sweatshirt and sweatpants, right? And you know, now it's summer, we can throw a robe and a swim trunk into that mix. So it's just a matter of layering in the right order and, you know, not getting way too far ahead of ourselves. Like, we've never gone after really a footwear collab. That would never make any sense yet. Might in 3 years or something, right? But again, it's about that intuitive idea that you're bringing up, is really trying to not be contrived. You don't want to have an audience and then throw them for a loop. They're trusting the brand and they're trusting the direction by following you in the first place and by wearing the product. And, you know, you don't want to go to a jazz concert and then all of a sudden a rock and roll song breaks out. Kind of doesn't make sense, right? The evolution takes a long time from one to the other. So I feel as though the next obvious step would probably go from crew neck sweatshirts to maybe a crew neck sweater, from sweatpants to maybe a chino or a khaki pant, and then slowly just evolve the brand to, you know, eventually we'll have full cut and sew collections, but it's just got to be timely. And the other thing is, you know, this is a business too. You could really sink a ship by throwing yourself out there and investing too much money into things that just have no proof of concept yet, or aren't tried, tested, and true with your customer. We have to think about what the people that have been following us want first. And there's a, you know, you just follow sales data and your hindsight data to see what that is. You know, like, we don't sell a lot of yellow compared to blues. So last thing I'm going to do is put out a yellow sweater. My customer doesn't want it. So it'd be bad for the customer. They wouldn't be happy with us. And at the same time, be really bad for business, because this is a business.
You make it sound very, very easy, almost intuitive, and I'm pretty sure that it isn't, Adam. Let me just change tack a little bit, because I sense you get inspired by the work of other great designers, brands, obviously travel to lots of the markets that you talk about with so much passion. Particularly if we roll back the clock a couple of years, obviously it was much more difficult to travel around during the pandemic. Did you have to pivot where you got your inspiration from? I don't know, was it about, I don't know, is it the cliche, you know, you'd go to the beach, or you'd take the dog for a walk, or time with family? How do you do that? And if you need to change your pace and get a bit of a blast of inspiration somewhere else, I know you love your art and design, music and so forth. What do those non-work Adam moments, what do they look like?
I've never drawn inspiration from fashion, ever. I was following cooking. I was following travel. I was really into, you know, just architecture. One of my best friends is this guy, Dave. He's a musician, and I would travel with him to go to his shows. And I was lucky enough, as a hobby photographer, I'd go around and I'd kind of accompany them, and I'd take some pictures of the venue and behind the scenes. And they really got me into like other things, but fashion, like architecture, painters, going to museums. Like, when we would go to a city, we wouldn't go to the fashion store. We would go to the museum and the art exhibition. And, you know, when I was staying in Paris, some people go to Broken Arm, which I would recommend, right? But I'm going to Pompidou and I'm going to Almine Rec Gallery. So I draw a lot of my inspiration off the arts and architecture and travel and cooking. And speaking of Japan before, one of the things that they do incredibly well is domestic life. domestic horticulture, what little knickknacks and tchotchkes you should have in your kitchen or your apartment, the rebirth of audiophile equipment and you know, having like amazing stereo sound in your home. That stuff inspires me, and I feel like it doesn't really push me in a direction. You know, like I just want to make this. Let's look at what, you know, the process for me was always, okay, you want to design a collection, you got an idea in your mind, you don't start drawing stuff, you go find fabric. So we find amazing fabric, and then we're like, wow, look at this. This is like some weird wool sweater knit, but on the back it's like this diamond thermal. Like, this is incredible. What could we use this for? Right? And we go from there. Could it be like a like an outerwear piece, like a vest? Could it be a robe? Could it be a, I don't know, right? Like, what could we do with this? And we draw it from there, rather than me saying like, oh, well, what's this brand doing? What did Margaret Howell do this season? Or what did Nigel Caborn do this season? We need to do something like that. I feel like that would be kind of insulting to the other designers out there, because again, there's just so much of it. For me, it's rather like, I want a lifestyle. What kind of piece do I want? What am I missing? You know, when I go shopping, I haven't gotten a good what in a long time. So let's design one. But first, let's find some fabric that we like and go from there. So I think the idea of finding inspiration from things that have nothing to do with fashion for me, and this is not to say that anybody else is doing it wrong. It's just for me, I look at domestic life. How should you be as a person outside of what you wear? Like, where are we going? We're about to launch a newsletter series that kind of talks a little bit about this. Like, how do you care for your plants in the wintertime? That's interesting, right? What new architecture's out there? What gallery, there's a Gagosian exhibition opening in Hong Kong. Let's talk about that. I feel like there's a lot of inspiration. And I think that kind of lends itself to product. You know, I'd rather almost work with artists and design a smock or an apron or like a collection for an artist than to do something really overtly fashion and runway. And again, not because I think that it's wrong, but because other people are already doing that incredibly well. You know, and I don't want to be a Comme des Garçons. I want to try to fit in my own lane. And to your point, I think the inspiration's got to be different than looking at fashion.
That was Adam Ginotti, co-founder, designer, and product developer of Druthers. And you can learn more about the brand and its story by heading on over to druthersnyc.com. That's all for this episode of The Entrepreneurs. We'll be back at the same time next week. Do look out for Eureka, heading your way every Friday. The Entrepreneurs was produced by Laura Kramer, with mixing and editing by Tamsin Howard. You can listen again and find out more about the show at monocle.com. You can also follow us and catch up with the archive wherever you get your audio. To contact the team, write to Laura on lrk@monocle.com. I'm Tom Edwards. Goodbye, and thanks for listening to The Entrepreneurs.